The word mitzvah is a Hebrew word that means divine commandment. It can also refer to an act of human kindness. In this country, many Jewish communities hold an annual mitzvah day, a day of good works. The Detroit area Jewish community held one this past December, December 25th to be exact. Hundreds of volunteers took part in social service projects, visiting elderly people, cooking holiday meals, delivering Christmas gifts to poor families. They did these things on Christmas not only to make life better for the people in need, but also to make life easier for Christians who work for the social service agencies. By volunteering on Christmas Day, the Jewish volunteers made it possible for more Christians to stay at home and celebrate Christmas with their families. This wasn't the first year that the Detroit Jewish community had held a mitzvah day on Christmas, but this was a special year because this time about 50 volunteers from the Muslim community came to work alongside the Jewish volunteers. They joined together to help families in need and to support the Christians on their holy day. This working together was in itself a mitzvah. To quote Mary Turfa, one of the young Muslim volunteers, "There's so much hatred in the world today. It's really sad. We all believe in helping people. And a holy day is a holy day. It doesn't matter to whom." And to quote Michael Ben-Giat of the Jewish Federation, "Doing a mitzvah, a good deed, it's not a Jewish thing, it's not a Muslim thing, it's a human thing." One reason the Detroit Mitzvah Day draws our attention is that it's still the exception rather than the rule. We have a long way to go as Jews or Muslims or Christians or Unitarian Universalists until this kind of cooperation becomes routine, so common that it's no longer newsworthy, until every day becomes a mitzvah day. To this vision, we have something very special to contribute. Our purposes and principles, our covenant, can be read as an invitation to practice pluralism in our congregations and in the larger community. We're called to serve as a living example to all people who wish to live peacefully in a pluralistic world. We draw our inspiration from a wide range of faith traditions, from the fruits of reason, and from our own personal experience. But more important than having access to these many sources is what we do with them. Many, if not all, of our congregations tolerate diverse points of view. Tolerance is a very good thing. It's certainly a great improvement over intolerance. But tolerance doesn't necessarily lead to spiritual growth. In fact, it may lead in the opposite direction. Tolerance can create a climate of restraint, polite silence, of not wanting to step on people's toes. But if you're too afraid to step on people's toes, if you're afraid to stumble, even look foolish on occasion, you could never learn to dance. In the dance that's called pluralism, we learn to attune ourselves to each other's different rhythms, our different life experiences, different concerns. And through this give and take, we create a more dynamic kind of unity, which goes much deeper than simple tolerance. The give and take most often occurs at the boundaries that we have made to distinguish one group of people from another. These boundaries can divide us. They can also provide points of contact through which we come to know one another. One important point of contact, and sometimes tension, occurs at the interface between the familiar and the unfamiliar. Consider this example. In some UU churches, paganism has a major voice, but in other churches it has none. When I first came to this church, I attended a worship service about paganism. The worship leader and his companions marked out the sanctuary and established a sacred space. And the leader spoke at length about contemporary paganism, where it had come from, what it stands for. I was fascinated. Here's a religion which really reveres the earth. But then the speaker went on to attack Christianity. I can understand why he might do this, because paganism has been persecuted by Christians over the centuries, pagan religious practices suppressed by Christians. But as a budding Unitarian Universalist, I was disillusioned. What had started out sounding like an invitation had turned into a polemic, and I really wondered if it was possible for somebody to advocate one of our many sources without attacking another one. Many years later, when I was a student minister, I saw a more positive example. I did my internship at the First UU Society of Middleborough in Massachusetts. And that church includes a lively group of people, or perhaps it's a group of lively people, who belong to CUPS, the Covenant of Unitarian Universalist Pagans. That summer, I had been reading The Spiral Dance by Starhawk, and I'd been impressed by the author's courage and spirituality and her deep commitment to the environment and ecological concerns. So I wanted to learn more, and I went to the CUPS meeting. What I found there was a group of friendly people who get together for a ritual, sometimes a didactic presentation, but always, without exception, a delicious potluck supper. When I sat down with them in their circle, I felt the same way I do when I sit by a campfire in the north woods of Maine in the late summer. I felt a deep connection to these people and to wild nature right there in the church parish hall. Sometimes when we reach out to the unfamiliar, we find it's not so strange after all. It may even be home in a different guise. Another point of contact, and sometimes tension, has to do with Christianity. Our faith tradition is ambivalent towards its Christian roots. Sometimes we embrace these roots, and other times we ignore them. It's a troubled relationship, but it is a family relationship. Unitarian Universalism grows out of the Protestant Reformation, and its taproot reaches back to the early Christian churches. The imperatives of love and justice that were articulated so powerfully by Jesus and the Hebrew prophets still breathe powerfully through our seven principles. We can and we do offer a safe space for those who come to us for healing from the excesses of Christian religion. And we offer a critical space for those who need to take a step back from beliefs that they've held unexamined for much too long. At the same time, we can still provide a place of honor for one of our great sources. I'm thinking of Christmas Eve at this church. Every year, Bob Sampson reads the Nativity story from the Gospel of Luke. He frames it carefully, reminding us all that this is a story that has been cherished and handed down the generations. And in this way, we affirm the Christian story to be a part of our story. Another point of contact, and sometimes tension, occurs between the religious humanist and those who would rather frame their beliefs in terms of God or gods. Religious humanism proclaims an end to superstitious obedience. It puts the ultimate responsibility for human destiny into human hands, right where it belongs. But humanism can be divisive when it presents the scientific method as the only legitimate mode of knowledge, or when it exalts rationality to such an extent that other human gifts are deprecated. We need to remember that each one of our perspectives contains truth, but not all of it. That the largest questions that concern us as human beings extend beyond the limits of human understanding. There's room for both the scientist and the poet in our fellowship. In fact, we need each other. Differences such as these may divide or enrich our fellowship. When we respond with intolerance, the congregation may be divided. When we passively tolerate differences, nothing much happens. So what steps can we take towards the mitzvah of pluralism? I think the most important step is hospitality. The pagan group at Middleborough taught me something about this. They invited all church members to participate in their ritual. I came out of curiosity and a desire for fellowship. I accepted an invitation, and they welcomed me in. I respected their ritual, and they respected my freedom to go with a deeper commitment or not. And I learned that I had more in common with the pagans than I had expected. They taught me another lesson as well. The Middleborough Church held an adult religious education class on Christianity. Some of the pagans attended. They didn't go to be converted to Christianity. They went for the fellowship and to find out what their co-religionists were up to. Let me take a little more complicated example. I have a friend from seminary who's been fortunate over the years to know some Sioux Indians and to learn something about their religious practices. And it's taken a fair amount of effort on both sides for this to occur. He has had to come repeatedly to find people who will sponsor him. Not everybody agrees with this, but over time he begins to understand and be able to enter another group's worldview, and they are changed and he is changed by this experience. There is some risk involved, but in the end there's great enrichment. The dance of pluralism is motivated by a holy curiosity, dissatisfaction with the familiar, and a desire to become more. It's motivated by compassion, a desire for the well-being of another, and a desire to know their concerns. You may have read the article in UU World magazine about the All Souls Unitarian Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Reverend Carlton Pearson was once a rising star among conservative Christians. He was a protege of the famous Oral Roberts, and he became the leader of his own megachurch. But in 1996, during the time of genocide in Rwanda, Reverend Pearson began to reflect and to struggle with the teachings of his church. He couldn't believe that the thousands of innocent people who were massacred in Rwanda and not yet saved by the Christian gospel would be cast into hell by a loving God. Throughout his prayers, Pearson came to the insight that all people are saved, not just Christians or Muslims or Hindus or atheists, everybody. As Pearson began to preach this universalist message, his change of heart didn't go unnoticed. The religious establishment that had once supported Pearson in his rise to power now shunned him. He lost his megachurch, except for just 200 members who continued to follow him. Just a tiny little remnant, 200 members. During this time of crisis, Pearson met Reverend Marlon Lavenhar of the All Souls Unitarian. He's become famous in the last couple of weeks because he's been to Uganda at a conference against the death penalty for homosexuality. Quite a great personal risk. But he's used to crossing borders like that. Lavenhar and Pearson had lunch together. They became friends. Lavenhar offered Pearson worship space during the summer season when All Souls went from two Sunday services down to one. Pearson and his congregation could have the 11:30 a.m. service. What happened next surprised both ministers. Members of the All Souls Church came to worship alongside Pearson's congregation. They accepted the theistic language they didn't normally use. They enjoyed the gospel music. And they especially found that they were nourished by a worship style that was much more outgoing than what they were used to. Come September, Pearson made the decision to come to All Souls, and he brought his faithful remnant with him. Today, the two congregations are in the process of becoming one congregation. The 11:30 service has got its own music director, which supports the Black Pentecostal style of worship, and people from both congregations attend this service. Many of the new members are attending classes in UU history, and perhaps they recognize their own Reverend Pearson standing in the lineage of people like Michael Servetus, Francis David, Theodore Parker, all of those prophets in our faith tradition who stood for religious freedom. As you may know by now, I'm not advocating the kind of unity that's based on uniformity. I am suggesting that we go deep in our differences, that we explore